Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, this is Bruce Norris. Thank you again for joining us. Once again, we're joined today by Michael Pines. He's been a California attorney since 1977, a licensed broker since 2005, an investor and founder of RE Ventures, a company that's bought over 50 properties in Utah and will do exactly the same thing in California. He's also dealt with the RTC, and he's very familiar with the foreclosure laws. Michael, welcome again.
Thank you, Bruce.
Foreclosure law change, our changes are very rare. We have one in 1137. And it doesn't solve an awful lot and leaves a lot for conjecture. I'm sure a pack of lawyers drew up the bill. How come there seem to be so many loopholes left for interpretation? And is that normal?
Unfortunately, I wouldn't say that it's normal, but when you have emergency legislation that is so politically charged, there are a lot of lawyers. There are lawyers advising the committees, but they don't have time to do their work, and the legislators don't listen or don't understand or don't want to take the time to understand, in my experience. And so you end up with a law like this, which in my opinion is a very poor law from a lot of standpoints. On the other hand, it's not that abnormal for the legislature to pass a law and then for it to take years of people trying to use it and apply it and having to go to court to have the courts interpret it.
Okay, that's a very interesting point, because that's really where I guess it's determined what this really means. Is court cases saying, okay, you win and you lose, and does that set a precedent for everyone to go, okay, well, that's what that means?
Yes.
Okay.
Although in this case, I feel that the lenders have a very strong argument that this law is so badly flawed that it's unconstitutional.
Now, what would okay? Let's go down that road for a second. I buy a property, or I'm in escrow with a lender, and they get notified that they have a problem as far as condition, and they get a fine while I'm in escrow. They're probably going to pay that fine just until we can close the escrow. How long does it take to resolve a constitutional issue?
A long time.
Okay. So, I mean, what is a long time? And we're not talking months. Now we're talking years.
We're talking probably years.
Okay. And the crisis may come and go, and their REOs be gone, and you could have this the decision after the fact, literally?
Right.
Okay. So in the short run, it's almost a moot point. We're going to deal with some of the ramifications of this without a resolution in the court system.
Yes.
Okay.
And unless the lenders can quickly, you know, somehow push this through the court system, convince the courts that it's an emergency and that they need a ruling, which I don't think they would be successful at doing, and get this – you have to go from the trial court to the courts of appeal to the Supreme Court.
Okay.
And that process takes years. And unless they can somehow push this through claiming that it's more important than all the other thousands of legal issues that the courts have to deal with, that the courts have to kind of drop everything else and give this case priority, then it's going to take years. Now, what they can do sometimes is they can get a preliminary ruling that the law is unconstitutional, and they can get a temporary injunction prohibiting the enforcement of the law pending the court hearing the case in full. Again, they have to convince the court that it's an extraordinary situation and worthy. There's some kind of urgent need for the court to do that. But sometimes you can get the court's attention. And one of the factors the court will look at is this law so bad and it's so likely that we're going to throw it out anyway that we better stop people from enforcing it at least temporarily. But barring something like that, we'll be stuck with this law for a long time, and there's going to be a lot of litigation.
Okay. The law applies to loans between January 2003 in December 31st, 2007. So let me give you a hypothetical. I buy a property that's lender-owned, close escrow, and I'm in the process of fixing it when the former owner decides that they were not given proper notification. The lender doesn't own the property anymore. I do. Can I get served?
You can get served. You will get served. If you are...
Am I considered a bona fide purchaser?
I was just going to say, if you are a bona fide good faith purchaser without notice, in other words, you weren't involved, you didn't specifically know, then you will have some protection on the law, under the law, and hopefully you will have some protection under your title insurance policy.
Next question. I bought it at a trustee sale. No title policy possible. Different league of problems?
Different league of problem.
Okay.
Yes.
So now I'm on my own dealing with it.
You're on your own dealing with it, but the law in those circumstances is probably going to limit the former owner to recovering damages, not getting the property back.
Okay.
So you will have arguably some exposure to pay the owner some money, but it will be very limited because you are a bona fide purchaser for value without notice. The one that may really be exposed to liability is the lender who didn't follow this law, and then the borrower or homeowner will have to prove they were damaged because this law was not followed and try to recover something from the lender. It's not very likely, in my opinion, from what I can tell, that you would have some kind of liability to the former owner. And they also have to be careful mucking up title, because if they file lis pendens, it used to be easy to file lis pendens. It's not so easy anymore, and there are severe penalties if you file lis pendens and tie up title to property, and the court ultimately finds that you weren't justified in doing that. So lawyers are a lot more careful. Lawyers can be liable, and their clients, for filing a lis pendens and tying up title to a piece of property if there's really not a solid basis for it. And the penalties are pretty severe. You have to pay the other side's attorney's fees and all kinds of things if you are found to have just tied up a piece of property without having good cause for doing so.
The basic thrust of 1137 is, let's give a little bit more time for notice. Let's make a little more effort to actually sit down with the people and see if we can work something out. And that all seems reasonable, but the law is a little vague on what that process entails. So is there any consistent training for somebody that's supposed to have that meeting? Because I would think at that meeting, let's say one of the things are you're supposed to phone call them three times and you hit pay dirt and you actually talk to someone in foreclosure and they say, yeah, I'd like to have the meeting within 14 days. That meeting might be very different than someone else's meeting depending on the skill of that person and the knowledge. Is there any training that's supposed to be there for that person conducting the meeting? How would they know what to suggest?
They won't, and they don't.
Okay.
I mean, there's just nothing that I know of. I mean, the lenders are probably scrambling to try to figure out how they're going to set up some kind of procedure to comply with this law if they're not ignoring it, or even if they know about it. I mean, in my experience, there will be lenders who don't even know this law passed, and so they're not doing anything. There will be lenders who know that it passed are talking to lawyers, and the lawyers are trying to help them set something up, but probably also advising them that they should probably challenge the law, and it may well be determined unconstitutional. And then there are lenders who know about the law and are just going to ignore it anyway and hope they just don't get caught.
Wow. That's probably the hot potato for the next few years, because somebody's going to have some class action lawsuits probably regarding that, I would think.
I would think so, too.
Now, title companies, let's say there's a loan date that falls in the sweet spot, and there's a foreclosure process and ultimately a trustee's deed, and they get asked to give title insurance on that. Are they going to have an exclusion that we're not guaranteeing any of this was done correctly?
My guess would be yes.
Okay.
I mean, what the title companies are saying preliminarily is they're going to require a document from the lender which will make the lender liable if, in fact, the lender did not follow this law, so they can at least pass on the liability to the lender.
Now, it's my understanding that when they actually filed an NOD, that has to have that on the NOD now.
It does, and I think the title and company will go further, though, and require a document that makes it clear that the title company will be indemnified for what the lender did.
Mm-hmm.
They may very well also make it an exception to the policy as well, but, you know, the title companies, they're kind of in a catch-22. They're supposed to be providing you with title insurance, and they want to sell it to you
right.
as the acquirer of the property. So they don't want to put so many exclusions in there that you start looking and going, gee, I'm not really getting much out of this title policy, or I might be, but I'm not going to pay as much for it. On the other hand, they don't want to be responsible for this law and take liability for this law and take liability for what the lender did. So at a minimum, they will try to say – to pass that liability along to the lender and say, look, if there is a problem, we're going to cover it. They may or may not cover it, but to sell title insurance, we need to cover this, or we're not going to be able to sell title insurance. But if there's a problem and we have a problem, we want to be able to turn around and recover from you, the lender who created this problem, because you're the one that was responsible to comply with this law and you didn't.
What if the lender no longer exists? Which is probably a big yes.
Yeah, then the title company is going to be stuck.
Okay, but not necessarily the investor.
Not necessarily the investor.
Okay. When I read through what you gave me, and I already had read 1137, but not through the eyes of an attorney, it was interesting because I read it and I thought, okay, it sort of falls under that category of you can't think of everything right now. Because there's a lot of stuff where you think, okay, does that include this? And so there's a list, though, I'm going to just talk about. This is supposed to be dealing with owner-occupied property only, as usual. Okay. For what type of product? If I lived in an eightplex in one of the units, is that covered or is that even discussed? And inventory type is up for grabs?
Yes.
Okay.
That's one of the problems. It didn't specifically limit it to 1 to 4 units, as is typical with regard to some of the other foreclosure
right.
and real estate laws.
Everything in California is 1 to 4 units specifically
right.
usually for that.
And I'm sure the lawyers were going crazy.
They meant to do that.
Well, I'm sure the lawyers were yelling and screaming at the legislators that, you know, wait, this might conflict with other foreclosure laws. It has potential conflicts with the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, a federal law. It has potential conflicts with the Fair Credit Reporting Act, other federal laws. And I'm sure the lawyers were just tearing their hair out saying, you know, you just can't throw this out there in a hurry or it probably won't stand up if somebody challenges it, or it can create more problems than we already have. But the legislators felt politically pressured to do something to respond to the emotional response of the public of, we need to do something to punish these horrible lenders
mm-hmm.
and put the burden on them. So we need to get something passed in a hurry.
Well, that's why you kind of think, all right, good luck trying to win over anyone in a short duration, because you're really the target at this point, the lenders are. One of my favorite parts of it, of course, is the fact that the lenders can get fined up to $1,000 a day for a brown lawn. Now, where I'm buying in Moreno Valley, they're going to be out of business really fast if the city of Moreno forces that issue. We just had a meeting with another city's core people, and I asked them what they were doing. And so there's a lot of misconceptions on what the cities have. I don't read anything about they only can fine the lender for out-of-pocket costs, but that was their perception. So I don't think that's true. I didn't read anything that said that. I read $1,000 a day fine
right.
was up to $1,000 a day fine. I mean, where's the cutoff? I mean, is there something that's egregious that's $1,000 and something that's $100?
Who knows?
I mean, there was nothing specific, was there?
No.
Okay. Well, that means you could have a lender, and you will have lenders that have the houses all over everywhere. So they'll have houses in 20 cities and get treated 20 different ways for the same infraction.
Yes.
Okay. That'll confuse the heck out of them.
Yes.
Okay.
And they'll deal with it as it comes up. This is a dream for lawyers. It's going to keep – a lot of lawyers are going to make a lot of money because, you know, they'll be, the cities will be, will attempt to fine them. Mm-hmm. They're entitled to due process, you know, so there'll be some type of due process that they're entitled to.
The city?
The lender.
14 days. Well, at
no,
least.
No. But what I'm saying is after they get fined or cited,
I see,
then there will have to be some kind of a judicial process that allows for the lender to fight it. Cities can't just, you know, fine you without giving you due process of law.
Okay.
So there'll have to be some kind of process, and I think I know what it will be, unless they enact something special, whereby the city will give the lender the right to fight the fact that they were fined, what the amount was, and so forth. And so lenders will be hiring lawyers to fight it, except that if it's only a $500 fine and the lawyer's going to be too expensive, they may just go ahead and pay it.
Right.
But they'll attack it on an individual basis, but I wouldn't be surprised to see lawyers, you know, they always feel a need. We start specializing in SB 1137, including fighting cities that are trying to fine it, trying to levy fines.
Well, I drove here. I heard an attorney's on the radio ad for specifically the people in foreclosure and loan doc mistakes. So their niche is reading for the, you know, infractions that they might have in the original loan docs or something.
Right.
So you're right. The niches abound in this mess right now.
Niches abound, and this will be one of them.
Now, what about just the singling out of that owner and not another owner? So here's another example. Lender takes back a property through foreclosure. It's got a brown lawn, broken windows, and, you know, not their fault. They just got it. Next door house has a rental that's been around for 10 years. Same exact condition. Doesn't have any problem connected to this statute at all. Is that accurate?
Yes, and that's one of the reason, one of the arguments the lenders have that the law is unconstitutional.
When I buy an REO that's listed by an agent, I don't fall under 1137. If I buy the exact house through a trustee sale, I do.
Right.
Okay. So that is pretty interesting, and I doubt most trustee sale buyers at this point understand that they have the same liability as the cities.
I think very few people understand this law, period, or what it will mean. The lawyers can't figure it out, and you know, simply don't know. The materials I sent you were, I believe, Peter Munoz, who wrote this article I gave you, was actually an advisor or to one of the committees that passed this law. And he doesn't know what it means. And a lot of the lawyers attending were asking questions, and he just kept chuckling and going, who knows? So there are a lot of unanswered questions.
You can see why legislation gets to be about 3 inches thick, because you have to think of everything, every possible scenario, and it's tough to do.
It is, and it takes time. And there wasn't time here for the lawyers to do their job, you know, which is to anticipate that and try to figure out, you know, try and do the right thing, try and make it conform and not conflict with other laws, try and make it so it's enforceable and it makes sense. And it just doesn't appear that a whole lot of that happened with this, with SB 1137.
Has there been any, it's quite early in the process. We just bought a property that had a fine on it, and it delayed the close of escrow because the lender did not know it had occurred. It occurred because they had a green pool. And whatever the fine was, they had to pay it on their side. Has there anybody been fighting anything yet? Has there been any lawsuits saying, you know, this is a bad thing?
There are none that I know of, but it's coming.
Oh, yeah. I can see it going to come.
And it's going to come on both sides. I mean, one of the things, and I almost even hate to mention this, I'm getting a lot of phone calls and emails from lawyers saying, and non-lawyers saying, can you help us use this law to prevent foreclosures, you know, or delay them or keep the homeowner in the home or whatever? And unfortunately, the answer is yes. And there will be lawyers that will probably specialize in representing borrowers and homeowners and using this law to say, wait, you didn't do this foreclosure properly.
Right.
Or you're not doing it properly if it's in process.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to start over again at best. And just we'll be able to just drive lenders and their lawyers crazy.
The cost, I could see, go up quite a bit for a lender.
Yes. And they may not do that for that reason. I mean, but then lawyers will have a way generally, like I said, where there's a need, and they'll say, well, I'll do it for, you know, $100 a file or whatever, you know, and reduce the cost if they really want to do it.
Mm-hmm. We had a property that we bought and was in escrow, and they had to retract it because they had done the foreclosure wrong. They had to start the whole process all over again because of something that they didn't do right. But I think it was connected not with this law, but with MERS or something like that. But that can happen.
We're seeing a lot of that. I talk to lawyers often, and judges are getting extremely frustrated. I talked to a bankruptcy lawyer just the other day, and judges are starting to require lenders to bring the original notes and trust deeds to court.
In California. Wow.
And they can't do it. They can't even find them.
Of course not.
They don't know where they are, and the judges are saying, well, then what happens is the lender files what's called a motion for relief from stay from the bankruptcy to go forward, and the judge is saying, that's fine, but you better bring me the original note and trust deed, or I'm not going to let you foreclose. I'm not going to grant relief from stay.
Wow. Well, I think I've noticed a change in the quantity of trustee sales because I think there's a lot of frozen files at the NOD stage going, okay, we got to catch up with all this stuff. So they got to do their mailer, and they got to make their 3 phone calls, and they got to catch up with the verbiage. So I think for the next 60 days, investors in California can expect they're going to start hearing good news about there's less foreclosures and all that. And it's literally just a bottleneck because the process has changed, and the lenders are trying to catch up with what they're supposed to do. A couple of things I found interesting about this one was it's very common for someone in foreclosure to do, first of all, they don't do anything for quite a while, typically. But then if they get active, they call somebody, maybe a foreclosure consultant. It's my understanding that once somebody hires a foreclosure consultant that is trying to help them and stop the process, or that they almost become ineligible for anything this bill has to do.
There is an exception.
Okay.
For that. However, it's very unclear what the qualifications are and what that foreclosure expert's supposed to do or not do. So a lender relying on that exception is probably at some peril.
Okay. So they probably would just overkill and do it anyway, which makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what they're going to do. I mean, I don't know what the lenders are going to do. I'm sure there are teams of lawyers that are trying to figure that out and trying to help lenders that want to try to comply with this law figure out how to do it. And it's not going to be easy.
Can you see lenders becoming more motivated to sell their notes at a discount?
Yes.
Just say, heck with it.
Absolutely. They're already motivated.
Okay.
And this just adds to that motivation because then the next person has to deal with this law and figure it out.
Right.
Which will result in people paying less for the debt and lenders getting less because they're taking that burden on.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're a buyer of debt in California, you should certainly be aware of this law and be aware of this burden that you'll be taking on and consider that when you're deciding whether to buy the debt or not.
Absolutely, because that's a much different journey than buying the property.
Right.
I would think that the lenders would also start getting more motivated either to fix the properties up or discount them much quicker and get rid of the houses.
That's your department.
Yeah.
It's hard. Yeah, but go ahead. They would certainly have reason to based on this.
Yeah, if they were going to sit there and get fined. Not that they're getting an awful lot for the properties now, but they don't need it to disappear further.
Right.
So did 1137 solve very much?
No.
Okay. A lot of changes never do, but the foreclosure law, if it's done quickly like this one was, can cause more problems than it's worth. But I do think it creates opportunities for note buyers and for buyers of fixer-uppers that lenders own. I think that's going to have a very motivated lender at the end of that fine.
Yep.
So
I think you're right.
Well, Michael, thank you again for joining us. And we look forward to hearing about some of those bulk deals from whatever this new entity is going to they're going to spit out some great deals, I'm sure.
I'm sure they are.
All right, Michael. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.